Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, Rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Box, Box. Box, 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 Box.
Oh Gott, yes!
Holy Mac and Cheese Balls.
Und da sind wir schon wieder mit einer weiteren Interview-Episode. Wie versprochen, spielen wir euch alle Interviews in voller Länge.
Weil wir ein seriöser Podcast sind und weil die Interviews einfach richtig spannend sind.
Einer davon war Glenn Dunbar, der Teamfotograf von Aston Martin, der jetzt nicht mehr Teamfotograf von Aston Martin ist, weil der gesagt hat, das mit den Reisen, jetzt reicht's. Und ich glaube, wenn ihr das Interview hört, versteht man auch, dass es irgendwann auch zu viel wird. Und auch dann natürlich, Caro, was ist eine wichtige Frage, die man natürlich zuerst stellen muss?
Wie bist du eigentlich zur Formel 1 gekommen?
Okay, so it started a while ago for me, back in probably about 2001 was when I kind of like got what I consider to be my break, my foot in the door, first rung on the ladder, and that was with an agency called LAT Photographic, still around now as Motorsport Images. Before that, I was always very interested in photography. My dad's a photographer. He was also a Formula One photographer. Kind of gave me the idea. He seemed to always have a good time, fly around the world when I was a child, take pictures of Formula One cars, come back, earn enough money to put food on the table and take us off onto a few good holidays. So I thought to myself, well, you know, let's pursue that. You know, always loved Formula One, always loved photography from my father. Unfortunately, he retired from Formula One before I actually got anywhere close to starting, so I never had the opportunity to go to a racetrack with him and shoot. But he did point me in the right direction. He did say you should try this agency, you should try these people. So before that break in 2001, I worked at a couple of smaller agencies in London. They did sort of all kind of sport from golf to darts to motorsport to football to rugby, and started in the darkroom processing the film that would come back from their photographers, and you gradually push and push and push, and you want to get out to do events. So I gradually got to go out and do a few sort of general sport events. Then this opportunity at LAT Photographic came up. Obviously, you know, LAT is one of the biggest, if not now the biggest, photographic agency in Formula One. And an opportunity was there. I seized upon it. Why not? Again, starting in the darkroom, called Darkroom Scumbags is what we were called by the photographers, because we were literally just in a darkroom all day long, printing up prints, doing Jeep runs. And also, which was very exciting, was actually processing their film when they came back from a Grand Prix. So I was actually seeing the images on transparency that they shot before they had even seen them themselves. So it was fantastic to see all this amazing photography coming back from the races. And it kind of gave you a very good eye of what was good and what isn't good. And again, at LAT, I had opportunity to go out and shoot the junior formulas in the UK. So Formula 3, I did 2.5 years of the Formula 3 championship. Some GT racing, British touring cars, and bits and pieces like that. Thankfully, my skills even back then kind of was picked up by my boss, Stephen T. And in 2005, LAT won the contract to provide a media service for GP2. Mm-hmm. I remember Stephen coming up to me saying, how would you like to come along to all the races in Europe and be the official photographer for the GP2 series? Of course, I was like, yeah, of course I do. That's fantastic. You know, that's where I'm heading for. That's the next step. Didn't have to be office space anymore. Didn't have to process film anymore. I was at that point a full-time photographer. That carried on for a year. End of that year, my boss Stephen came back to me and said, freelancer that they had was annoying him too much. would I like to do all the races and be the Williams official photographer? It means that I can get a this freelancer that I don't want to use anymore and use you. And again, of course, I was like, yeah, of course I do. And that started in 2006. So 2006 was my first full year in Formula One. And with the very daunting task of being the Williams official photographer. So it was an amazing opportunity. Absolutely loved it, traveling the world, taking pictures of racing cars. So that's kind of how I got started. And then the rest is just history. The rest is many a year being the Williams official photographer. Unfortunately, the agency lost that contract at the end of the 2018 series. But then in return, we picked up the contract for Racing Point. That was a bit of a carryover with Lance Stroll in that period. And I think that may have helped swing the powers that be for us to take the Racing Point contract. And then I became their official photographer for the 2020 and 2019 season. And now moving on to 2021, being the Aston Martin official photographer as well. So yeah, that's me and my career in a nutshell. Really.
This is great.
And it's kind of a new start with the new logo, new drivers. And so you can be part of it. So how does that feel, being a part of something kind of new next year or this year? It's 2021, this year.
Yeah, this year. Yeah, I feel massively honoured, basically. Massively honoured. Can't wait till I start working with Vettel. I've done a few bits and pieces with him in the past. We used to do a bit of work for Infinity, a little bit of a crossover back in the Red Bull days. So I don't really know him that well at all. But from the other photographers that I've spoken about him to them, they say, you know, he's a good guy. He's got a great British sense of humour about him. He loves Monty Python. He loves all that sort of the slapstick stuff. Great taste in sort of British bands as well. So I think I should hopefully, fingers crossed, get on well with him. I think he'll fit in with the team marvellously, just because the team is a load of, you know, English guys, they're down to earth and friendly and nice people. So it'd be a great great combination all round, and can't wait to get stuck in and just feel use a Lewis Hamilton phrase, blessed by the opportunity that I've got this year to take pictures.
When you scroll through your Instagram feed, your photos are just so amazing. They are just not like normal Formula One photographies. It's more like art. So how did you just find your style?
I just think it's from always trying to do something different. Mm-hmm. I get inspiration from a lot of other photographers in Formula One and what they do, and take snippets of what they do and try and incorporate it into my own photography at the same time. And I guess it's just something that I've built up over the years, and certainly wasn't a conscious decision to go down that route. I've just taken those pictures to make me happy. Mm-hmm. That's how I find I enjoy my photography, by creating images that I enjoy. And those are the images you see on my Instagram. And just, subconsciously gone down this kind of route of slowy images, making the car look dramatic, making it look like it's moving on track, just bringing all the action and excitement that I feel at a racetrack to my photos. And I'd love to share them on Instagram, and it's a great platform for photographers just to be able to show off their work and say, hey guys, look what I've done, I love this photo, I want you to see it. There's a certain amount of this is a terminology that another photographer told me. I don't know what channels this is going out on, but there is a swear word in it, so it's up to you to beep it or not. But the terminology is fig jam, which stands for fuck, I'm good, just ask me. So Instagram is a perfect base for photographers to fig jam, you know.
There we go. I love that phrase.
Love that.
Just writing it down. Let's have a look at your work on a track, at the track. How does a race weekend look like for you? When do you arrive? How do you get prepared? And what are you doing?
Yeah, the Grand Prix weekend, obviously 2020 was a lot different with it being a COVID year, so I'll kind of talk you through a normal weekend on 2019. Generally, we would fly on the Wednesday for European races, but earlier for the long hauls in Australia, we kind of go on the Sunday or even Saturday evening. Obviously, time difference and length of flights, a little bit of time to accommodate to the environment you're in, and also a bit of time, you know, you can put your feet up down by the seafront and have a glass of rosé is great. So yeah, the long haul ones we fly a bit earlier, but normally European, we'll fly on the Wednesday, land, get to the hotel. Thursday be the first day at circuits. It's the media day, so you have the sort of the track walk that the drivers do. You also do a track walk yourself generally, just to see if anything's changed, any holes have been covered up by signage, that kind of stuff. Lots of media interviews that need covering, catch up with your clients as well. So on the Thursday, we'd always have a little photo meeting with the team, discuss any sort of briefs or anything in particular that they have, then hopefully get out of the circuit quite quickly and enjoy a bit of the local cuisine and have a drink with your colleagues. Friday, obviously the day when everything starts, getting a little bit more exciting, getting a couple of hours before the track, before the track action starts, before the F1 action starts. So the run for a Friday is FP1. Generally, I'd spend FP1, half of it in the garage, then try and get out on track somewhere to get some action. You'd come back, rush back in. You'd normally have someone from marketing sort of chasing at your heels going, you've got a pit lane walk going on, we've got guests that need to be photographed, da 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 da. So between FP1 and FP2, it's just like this manic bit of time where you're photographing guests, photographing driver appearances. Maybe you have to go up to Paddock Club to photograph a driver appearance up there. Try and grab a sandwich. Generally, it means stuffing your face whilst walking down the paddock with a sandwich in hand. It's not because photographers don't have any manners. Actually, yeah, for a few manners. But yeah, it's like the only time you can grab something to eat. Go straight into FP2, go out on track somewhere, try and find a good place to go. Take some pictures, come back again. You kind of keep your fingers crossed and hope after FP2 you're quite quiet. But then again, you never know what the team may have in store for you. Again, maybe Paddock Club appearances. There might be evening events. You've got a photograph in a motorhome, in a hospitality, or even evening events in the city if they've got sort of partnership dinners and stuff like that. So Friday is generally a pretty manic day where your feet doesn't touch the ground. Saturday, similar. Obviously, we've got the two sessions, FP3 and then quali. It just seems to be a little bit less manic. It's only an hour per session. Generally, the sort of the amount of guests are a bit less on the Saturday because you kind of follow the drivers everywhere. So wherever they go to meet guests, you're kind of behind them, following them to take pictures. Obviously, with quali being on Saturday, the drivers are a little bit more focused on the day. So they do a little bit less, I seem to find, on the Saturday. And yeah, generally Saturday in the evening, very few events will take place because obviously the drivers want to get their beauty sleep for the next day. Sunday we will get in about 5 hours before the start of the day, for the start of the race. It's like a big countdown timer when you get in and you're sort of almost counting down the hours or minutes to the race. But again, it will start off generally when you have the first pit lane walk, guests come in, pictures of them hanging around the front of the garage, pictures of them with the car. Normally there's a Paddock Club appearance. Again, you pop up with the driver, take some pictures of that. Support races, if you're not double booked with something to do with a team or a client, you'll be expected to photograph some of the support races. And then the sort of the preamble of the race starts. You've got the driver's parade, which you try and capture some portraits at. You've got the whole grid ceremony and the national anthem and the guys getting out of the car, getting back in the car. Generally, you kind of leave before the guys get back in the car because, one, you're meant to by the rules and regulations, and two, if you don't, you generally don't have time to get to the place on the circuit. So then, yeah, it'd be a mad rush to get to your corner if you're doing the first turn start shots, or if you're somewhere else with all your gear, get the race under your belt. I tend to look at the race as an hour and a half session, almost sort of like compartmentalize it a little bit so it's not too daunting. Get the race done, get back to the grid, no, sorry, not to grid, get back to the paddock so he can get through the pit lane for Parc Fermé and podium. And then if one of your drivers happens to be in the top three, the teams always tend to do a team picture, get that done and sorted after they come back from their post-race interviews. Do a bit of editing. We send all our stuff straight back to London because we've got people back there that can look after it. But maybe there's some pictures you want to put your own personal sort of touches to. And then get the hell out of there and either fly home Sunday night or have a nice meal Sunday night and fly home Monday.
What a busy weekend. Wow. Pretty busy.
Yeah, your feet, as a photographer for an agency, your feet doesn't touch the ground. My kind of weekend isn't the same as every photographer's, because some photographers would do, you know, they're just there, they just produce a book of pretty pictures at the end of the year. Their race weekend's very different. But as a proper working photographer in the industry, yeah, it's nonstop. So the guys from Getty Images would have a very similar sort of weekend. The guys from XBB, again, a very similar sort of weekend. And DPPI, these are sort of the guys that do the team stuff and do the majority of the sort of commercial side of things.
Do you have an iWatch or something like that to check how many kilometers you're walking during the weekend?
I do, but on my phone, there's the health app on my phone. So, example, somewhere like Monaco, walking is crazy, the amount of steps you put in. I can't remember the exact kind of distance, but in Monaco, you know, hitting kind of like 35,000 steps a day.
Athletic, so very athletic.
Yeah, about maybe 20, 22, 23 Ks. Other races is less. But yeah, definitely Monaco is one of the big walking races. So is the Suzuka as well. So it keeps you fit.
Stay hydrated.
Yes, no, that is very important indeed.
So how many photos do you take during a race weekend? Millions?
No, not quite millions. It depends on the race, where we at, where we're at that point. If it's, you know, for example, Monaco is a very busy race for us. So you're looking at, what did I put down? Looking at probably for Monaco about 12,000 images by the end of the weekend. Quieter races, your home race in the Red Bull Ring. For us, it's not a very busy race, so probably about 8,000. But then, yeah, just depends on how busy, how many extra events you got to cover, how many driver appearances, how many meals and dinners and all that.
And how do you find, because you told us you do a track walk, do you see the perfect spot where you stand and you know, okay, this is the perfect spot to take for taking pictures? Or do you get like spots to pictures?
So the places we go around on the circuit are places that we have kind of historically always gone to, because we know there's plenty of angles there. Obviously, our time on circuit's limited. So Friday, you've got the 2 1.5-hour practice sessions. But the cars don't go round for 1.5 hours. You know, they do their little short little stints and come back in. So the actual time of photographing the cars is quite limited, especially if you work for quite a few teams, as LAT Motorsport Images do. So it's through kind of historically where you can go. So you'll go somewhere where you know you can get some shots, but then also get those shots in the bag, which are generally like the bread and butter kind of imagery that the partners need, that the team needs. And then if you can get that done quick enough, you've got a little bit of time to experiment. I think now I'm more experienced and been in the game a bit longer. I've got a little bit more control if I see somewhere on the track walk where I think, oh, that might make a nice picture, I can go to my boss again. Even though I'm freelance now, he runs the agency and we always have a discussion about where everyone's going. And if I say something I've seen that could work through working for him for many a year, he'll generally say to me, yeah, go off and do that. I think it's going to be a nice shot. But yeah, generally it's through sort of historic places we know, which is good to go to.
What are your most memorable moments whilst working as a photographer?
I like that question that you posed to me, because a lot of the time people do say favorite photos, which you have said as well in the little sort of bits that you said to mention. But memorable moments. So it's funny, I had to think about this a bit because my whole career has been full of memorable moments. But a few bits, some are good, some are a bit scary. One very memorable for me, I think, was Alonso's crash that he had in Spa a few years back now. Because I've always seemed to never have been in the right place to get a big incident on circuit. I've got little crashes, little spins before, but nothing, nothing kind of like that almost sort of blows your mind when you see it.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that I was at the right place at the right time, first corner. And I saw something kick off around the back of the field. And generally your focus is with the front of the field, because if something happens, that's what you want to make sure you get. But I just saw on the top of the frame, something going on, something not quite right. Swung the camera up, and just to see sort of Fernando sort of launching over the back of Leclerc's car.
Mm-hmm.
And just so happened I was on, you know, the perfect focal length. Got the whole sequence of him going up through the air, coming back down again. Thankfully, the three drivers involved, Hülkenberg, Fernando and Leclerc, they were all fine. And just had this amazing sequence on the back of the camera. And for me, it's taken me bloody years to be in the right place at the right time to capture something that was as dramatic as that. So yeah, that was a great moment for me. Fast forwarding up to this year a little bit, was actually Checo winning the race in the Sakhir Grand Prix. This year, being so close to the team, you really felt more part of the team than I've ever done in the past. And I actually remember when he passed the team, after he took the checkered flag, you get all the team hanging out, sort of cheering. I actually found myself cheering at the same time. I'm normally quite reserved. I wouldn't do that. I don't do that. That's not me. But I was cheering whilst taking the picture at the same time. And just such a massive feeling of elation. It was a fantastic moment. And Checo, you know, he's worked so hard through his career. Got to know him better the last 2 years. And yeah, you just realised how much it meant for the team and for the driver. So yeah, that was very memorable. And then one last thing that always sticks in my memory was, again, it was another win, but it wasn't for the win. It was when Pastor Maldonado won the race in 2012, Spanish Grand Prix for Williams. It wasn't him winning, which was very memorable for me, was the fact that I was actually in the garage when it burst into flames. So I was in the back of the garage just before Frank wanted to call a little meeting with all of the team to congratulate them. And I was actually helping their PR officer, Sophie, sort of get other photographers and media out, because obviously it was a private team thing. So I was helping her with that. And then all of a sudden you heard it before you could see it. You heard this funny whoosh and sort of everyone looked up, and in the corner of the garage, there was this flame just coming across the ceiling. And to this day, I swear that we all stood still for what felt like half an hour, but obviously wasn't. Someone then shouted, "Everyone, get out!" And we all sort of legged it out. But that was, obviously very memorable and very scary at the same time. And yeah, thankfully, no one was seriously hurt in that incident either. So yeah, those are kind of like the three things that really stick in my memory from my career.
Now, the question, of course, your favorite photo. What is your favorite photo and what's the story behind?
I'm not very good at favorites. I'm quite indecisive. So favorite song, favorite movie. I've got a list, you know, which I like, depending on what kind of mood I am, depends on what I like. So again, I thought quite long and hard over this question. And there's three pictures that spring to mind. So I'll quickly take you through the three pictures. I'll start from this year. Was one of them that's going to go down just because of the feeling of elation after Checo winning his first race, was the shot I did of him in his driver's room.
Mm-hmm.
He's there set on his massage bed, sort of had his shoes, racing boots were just thrown on the floor, I think he had his suit was half down, so he was just in his Nomex top. There was the trophy on the table. There was the Mexican flag. And he was on his mobile phone, must be to family and stuff. And just this sequence of shots of one shot is his hands is in his head, you know, like totally can't believe it. Another frame was him smiling, literally the biggest smile in the world. You couldn't get a bigger smile than that. And just to have access to go in there. There was no member of the team in there. There was only Checo, his trainer, and his manager. And I kind of like followed in afterwards. I was like, can I? And they're like, yeah, come on in. And I just sat there quietly in the corner and just quietly just snapped off frames when he was talking. And it's just such a private moment after such a, you know, your first race win. I just felt extremely lucky to be in there. I just loved the picture. And the funny bit at the end of that was the fact, obviously at the start of the race, there was an incident and he was kind of punted off by Charles Leclerc. So we were kind of done taking pictures, and Checo was like, I'm going to get changed now. And I was like, okay, I'll get out because, you know, underneath the Nomex, there's nothing else there. So I didn't really want to hang around for that. So I literally go and open the door to go out. And now it's Charles Leclerc standing there, like Ferrari entourage around in the TV cameras. So I'm like, oh, hello. And it's like, oh, can I come in? I'm like, well, I'm just a photographer. I'm not the right person to ask. But he's getting changed at the moment. Oh, but can I go in? It's like, no, I think probably just wait a couple of minutes. And so then I saw the PR and comms people from Racing Point. I'm like, yeah, can you just deal with this? I'm not sure what's going on here. So it was Leclerc coming back to apologise to Checo about what happened at the start, which it shows, you know, what a stand-up guy Leclerc is. But there's a very funny moment of opening the door and this Charles Leclerc, you know, can I come in? Not really. He's not got many plays on it at this moment. No, that was very funny. That just added to the whole moment photo. There we go. That's one in both of those. Still talking about Leclerc, another favourite picture of mine is from, when would it have been, 2019 maybe, around Dagna 1 at Suzuka, a rear shot of Charles Leclerc in his Ferrari. But the car is just massively loaded up, and it just shows you all the forces involved in a Formula 1 car, which then makes you realise about the force that the driver themselves must go under driving at the speeds they do. And it's just a fall in the frame rear shot of this Ferrari, and it's just shows you what Formula One is. It shows you those forces, it shows you how dramatic it is. And even Leclerc picked up on it, and he contacted me through social, and unlike a lot of drivers that would just rip it off of social, he asked if he could use it. He paid for it, and just, yeah, completely stand up kind of guy. So, you know, for a driver to sort of see one of your pictures and want to use it in that fashion is, yeah, it's a big sort of thumbs up, really. And, yeah, makes you smile. And the last one, sorry for my rambling, is quite an old shot of Vettel winter testing at Barcelona. And I did a slow shutter speed shot, a little car going down the main straight. But they'd just renewed their grandstands. So it was this afternoon light that was reflecting off of these grandstands, which was so new that they just caused the sun just to bounce back. And by shooting it really slowly, it just made it look like the grandstands were on fire. You can't even tell they're grandstands. It's just this lovely yellow evening light and this little car darting down the straight. And that's been one of my favorites for a long time.
For you, what is your favorite track as a photographer? Last year, everyone was so hyped by Bahrain about the outer circuit because of the sparks.
yeah. We as photographers always love sparks. You know, we haven't had them in Formula One for so many years. And what was it, about 2-3 years ago, they brought back the titanium chips in the board and sparks galore. So sparks, it's funny, if you're a photographer and you're there and you get a great picture of a car sparking, you're like, yeah, best picture ever. But if you're a photographer and you weren't at that corner when the cars were sparking, you'd be like, yeah, sparks, been and done. You've seen loads of them now, you know. Yeah. Old hat. So yeah, no, I can't really comment on that circuit just because I wasn't allowed out to take pictures on the track because I had to stay in the pits and pit lane because of the COVID protocol and working for the team. But for me, the tracks that stand out, one of them is Singapore. I just love cheating F1 cars at night in the city. It's magical. It's atmospheric. It's just, it actually makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. It's, fantastic around there. Just so many options and just changes the way to shoot Formula One. And the other place I love going to is Suzuka because it's a proper old school circuit. You can get close to the cars. So many tracks nowadays, you're so far away. There's catch fencing up everywhere. You just can't get close to them. But Suzuka, you can still get close to the cars. You're feels like you're a million miles away from civilization because you're sort of marching through the undergrowth to get to your corners. There's actually a very slim gap you have to shimmy yourself down between the arm cove and the catch fence. And it's got the nickname of Spider Alley. So in Japan, you've got these massive spiders. I mean, no joke, they can be the size of like a side plate. They're that big, and they're ugly looking spiders as well. They're scary looking. They've got bright colours on them. You look at them, you go, I don't want to get anywhere close to you. This is a stretch of probably about 30 metres, and it's the only way you can go to access like the other half of the circuit. Come FP1, if you sort of like dare go down there, you're basically fighting these spiders off with a stick that you can find somewhere and knocking the webs out the way and sort of, you know, you come out the other side and you feel all ticky and all like on me and stuff. And it's a Spider Alley. That's another insight that not many people probably know about. Suzuka's, brilliant, brilliant circuit. And the love that the Japanese public have for Formula One. It's brilliant as well. So it really, really makes a great race weekend.
How heavy is your equipment? I mean, do you only have a camera with you with like a huge lens, or do you have like a backpack full of objectives and lenses and different cameras?
The majority of photographers, we'd always have two camera bodies. One, you know, you can have one lens on one and one lens on the other. So you cover the bases if something were to happen. For example, you're on track, you're shooting with a big long lens, the 600mm, for example. Your other camera body would have a 70-200 on it. So if there is an accident or anything that happens, you're kind of covered both ways. And also, if you're out on circuit and one camera fails, or you drop it in a puddle, or you've got another camera to use. So at the moment, I'm using, they're called Canon 1DX Mark IIs, two of them. I'm also invested in the new technology of mirrorless. So I carry around Canon R5, so it's three camera bodies I have on me. And then you have, as I said, the long 600mm lens, which is that big telephoto one that you see at all sporting events kind of thing. And then a selection of different lenses and filters, my packed lunch in a bag that I'll take around the circuit. Generally, it's somewhere, I reckon, between 16 and 18 kilos of equipment when you'd walk out on circuit. Maybe a little bit more. I don't know. I've never weighed it.
You definitely should.
Body's just so used to carrying it. Sometimes you take out a few lenses if you know you're not going to use them at the corner you're going to. Obviously, you don't want to carry too much. But new tracks and new places you go to, you're like, it's always going to be a case of if you don't have it in your camera bag, you're going to need it. And it's always a case of, always be prepared. As a photographer, it's vital to always be prepared, because if you're not, it's going to come a time where you're going to get caught out. It's happened to all of us at times. You get a bit sort of close to being caught out by thinking you don't need as many, memory cards, or you don't need that lens, or and then something happens and you do, and so always be prepared.
Always have a backup.
Yeah, you've got to take an extra lens. Exactly. Always have a backup. Sure.
But the good thing is you don't need films anymore, thanks to digital photography.
Yeah, no, definitely, because that was always, because I started my career shooting film in the UK, and also when I did the odd F1 race in 03, 04 and 05, we were shooting film and digital. But always having a bag of film with you, in a little pouch was quite annoying, especially the times that every photographer has done this. You leave the pouch open and you go on, trot off to another corner, or something happens and you sort of sprint down to photograph it, and you look behind you and there's a trail of 35 mil canisters of film, and you can, you know, okay, go back, pick them all, put them back in.
Und eben, das muss man sich aber vorstellen, seinerzeit mit den ganzen Filmen, wie heißen die, Filmdosen, die haust irgendwo downe und dann den Schaß wieder aufklappen. Ich glaube, da sind viele nicht aufklappt worden.
Ich glaube, das
wäre eine Arbeit für Sebastian Vettel gewesen.
Mhm. Vielleicht war es auch damals schon eine Arbeit für Sebastian Vettel.
War Praktikant.
Ja, genau.
Ja, das Interview mit dem Glenn Dunbar, der ehemalige Teamfotograf von Aston Martin. Und falls ihr auch fragt, so, oh, vielleicht ist der Job ja noch frei. Nein, das machen wir. Nein, machen wir auch nicht. Aber der Glenn hat das eben auf Instagram geschrieben mit, ja, erstens danke für die netten Nachrichten, die mir reinkommen sind. Und zweitens, die haben schon jemanden neuen. Ich hoffe, ihr habt Spaß gehabt mit dieser Folge.
Ja.
Und wir hören uns dann ja, zur nächsten Episode mit dem nächsten Interview dann wieder.
Oh ja.
Auf Wiederhören.
Auf Wiederhören. Miau, 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 miau. Box, box. Box, 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 box. Oh God, yes! Holy mac and cheese balls.
Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, Rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.